This broadcast of the Diane Rehm Show is recorded, so we're not taking any new phone calls.
For joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. You've been listening to one of the most beautiful pieces of music ever written, being performed by one of this generation's most acclaimed recording artists. Yo-Yo Ma has been playing the cello since he was four. Today, he travels the world seeking out new audiences, new ideas, and a new understanding of how music unites us and helps us communicate. He joins me to talk about his Silk Road project, his latest recordings, and how music helps bring together people of different cultures. Of course, we invite you to join us as well. 800-433-8850. Send your email to drshow@wamu.org. What a pleasure to meet you.
Diane, it's so wonderful to be on your show, and really, I love the work that you do, and love to talk about
Thank
music.
Thank you. Tell me what this particular work of Bach means to you.
Well, I think it was the first piece of music that I actually learned. When I started cello at age four. I'm 52 now, so I've kind of had a 48-year-long experience with this work, and obviously it's changed a lot. And in the beginning, it was, you know, knowing the patterns and figuring out that, gee, I can learn this piece. It's really exciting.
But Yo-Yo, if you were 4 years old, this was a huge instrument in front of you.
Well, Diane, I have to confess that I wanted to play the hugest instrument, which was the double bass, having failed on the violin at an earlier age and decided, you know, as a four-year-old, big was good.
So you tried the double bass.
But I couldn't because it was too big. So we compromised on slightly less big but possible.
What happened with the violin?
I think, you know, a lot of people talk about musical talent as if this were, you know, a block of something that means that, well, that's you're either talented or not. And actually, I think music is more, it has other things going on. For example, I wasn't talented for the violin. I play piano. I love the piano, but I'm not a really good pianist. I have a great feel for the instrument, but somehow I took to the cello. And I can't quite explain it. And it's not, you know, the sound of the cello, the sound of the human voice and all that. I don't know why. And I know I've heard enough stories with kids who try an instrument and it doesn't work. And then suddenly one day they see the trumpet and they say, that's it.
It works.
That is me. It is I.
You're just back from China. Mm-hmm. You traveled there with the Silk Road Ensemble. Tell me about the Silk Road Ensemble.
Well, I think it's a group of people, now friends, that we met as a group for the first time in the year 2000. And the idea behind it is that people I know sometimes are separated politically by borders, but actually they're joined by many times in history. They were joined together in different forms, and the historical parts remain. So, and you can actually go from the Mediterranean all the way to the Pacific, and at various times the roads were open, whether the sea routes or land routes. And when the roads are open, you have trade, you have cultural exchanges, you have friendships, you have common stories, and you actually have a lot of creativity. And then sometimes the roads close. For example, right now, one could not drive from the Mediterranean all the way to the Pacific. And maybe that is a dream, the way that we have a dream of saying we can go from the East Coast to the West Coast of the United States. Wouldn't that be a great dream to have one day when the roads are all open? And I think, and the roads are open with our ears. So if we use our ears, you can actually travel literally in both geographically as well as in time to places and times that where wonderful things existed and continue to exist. And if we bring people together, we can present the world on one stage.
Tell me about these friends that you're traveling with. How many? Who are they?
Well, it's kind of a band of brothers and sisters, you know. What we have here, what we did in China was to tour with this group, and it's kind of the evolution of a band of people that come from Brooklyn, New York, from Beijing, from New Delhi, from Tehran in Iran, from Baku, Azerbaijan, we traveled with about 20 people, but at various times we've now worked with many people, and the work kind of spreads in different countries. So we have friends in Armenia, and sometimes we would tour with them, and then from Turkey, from Israel, but there's a core group of people, and we went to China. We played at the Special Olympics, played the opening of the ceremony, which was wonderful because it's a cause that we really believe in, you know. It was a great honor, and then we toured on our own in Shanghai and Beijing and Suzhou.
And your emphasis is on drawing from the music of each of those cultures to create something new.
Absolutely. That you don't lose the past while you're inventing something that makes sense for now.
Now, let's listen to something from your new CD. It's titled New Impossibilities, a collaborative work between you, the Silk Road Ensemble, and the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Tell us about this piece you call the Arabian Waltz.
Yes, it's a really interesting piece, and you're hearing right now a percussion beginning with of all instruments, the wind instrument is a shakuhachi. It's a Japanese bamboo flute, and Ko Umezaki plays it also with a bamboo flute from Iran. So Siamak from Tehran is playing the same bamboo flute, which is called the ney in Persian music, and both are used for meditation purposes, one for Islam, the other for Buddhism. And this piece is written by Rabbi Abu Khalil, who's a wonderful oud player from Lebanon. And Rabbi now lives in southern France. He is he's from Lebanon, and he's a great jazz musician, improviser, but he also writes. And we took this on and then made it our own. And he actually, we met him this summer in France, and he heard it, our version of it, and he said, "That's great, go with it." Thank you.
this must have been so gratifying for you to hear these various instruments coming together in such a new and fresh way.
Absolutely. Diane, I just think that there are, in culture or in cultural work, there are different boundaries. You know, there are different kinds of frames. And I think what brings all of us together, I think, is one core value, which is virtuosity and generosity together. So basically, everybody that is a member does something unbelievably well, but they don't want to keep it for themselves. They really want to share it, and they know that part, that one of the fundamental things in music is that you're always working for something that's bigger than yourself. So no matter how good you are, you're always learning, and you're opening your awareness to everything around you, just the way that nobody grows up today listening to one music. That it means that then it begs the question, well, who are we and how do we fit in the world? And how wonderful it is that if you can build enough friendship and trust between members, then you learn about their instruments, then everything is shared.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma is with me, and after a short break, we'll be back with your phone calls, your email. Stay with us. And if you've just joined us, one of the most sought-after cellists in the world, Yo-Yo Ma, is with me. He's recorded more than 75 albums, won more than 15 Grammy Awards. In 2006, he was named a UN Peace Ambassador. His most recent recordings are Appassionato in January 2007, and now New Impossibilities, featuring the Silk Road Ensemble and the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. And if you'd like to join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. I was very neglectful in not mentioning that at the opening of the program, we were listening to the first movement of the first Bach suite in G major, the Prelude, which you play so wonderfully and so beautifully.
Well, thank you so much, Diane.
Every time I hear it, I am reminded of our son's wedding, where his best friend from Oberlin played that for us.
That's so
before
wonderful.
The wedding. It was just wonderful. Here's an email from Anne, who says, I'm a big fan of your music. You play so beautifully. My talent lies in playing bassoon, but I really love the sound of the cello and wish I could learn it. I started listening to your music when my teacher suggested getting one of your CDs to show how much feeling can be put into music. It helped me a lot in my phrasing, and music has helped me a lot in my life.
Isn't that a really sweet, wonderful statement?
And perfectly in tune with your thought of music on the Silk Road.
Well, I think so, in the way that I think a bassoonist can just as easily play a Bach suite, and bassoonists do. And but the idea that if we use our ears and our minds, I think you can get, and we become curious or passionate about something, you immediately can get into the inside of something else, of another music, of you can start a conversation that leads somewhere. And I think the more we know something that is precious to us, that we can identify what's precious to us, but also that's precious to somebody else, and someone else knows what's precious to us, we actually start better conversations.
There's a very moving piece on the new Impossibility CD. It's titled The Silent City, and I gather it was composed by an Iranian to honor Iraqis killed by Saddam Hussein in an infamous gas attack.
Yes, exactly. And this is the person who composed it is Kehan Kalhor, one of the great spike fiddlers. In other words, it's an instrument called the kemanche, and it's so popular from North Africa all the way through to Central Asia, and to me the kemanche is a forebear of the cello, because it's played like the cello, but it's a round instrument, and it's the bow is held. And I've learned so much from Kehan as a musician. I've in terms of his phrasing. So what the bassoonist has said, I've learned so much in terms of how to deal between silence and music.
Talk a little about that notion of phrasing and how that comes to you. I mean, individual musicians have individual interpretations of phrasing far beyond what the composer may intend. How do you decide what is to be phrasing?
I think one of the possibly either expressed or and sometimes internalized goal of all music is to be uplifting, to be transcendent. And so what leads us towards phrasing is a sense of life, but also going beyond, in the same way that music is something greater than ourselves. One idea behind phrasing is as long as the music speaks, you're alive. So you're keeping something alive. And in any composition, you don't want it to end, because the ending is the end of life, or you have transcended life. And I think that is as true of the music, the Arabic music that you grew up listening to, or Egyptian music. I love this music because it is so... it is transcendent. It does bring people together. You remember people dancing to the music, and it is no different from music that we listen to. Maybe we're not moving while we're, maybe we could listen to a waltz and not dance. On the other hand, people want to get up.
Of course.
And I think the idea is that music is some form of energy that actually activates our imagination. It activates our sense of community, and most of all, it activates something that's a coded inner life.
Why do you think that at age 4, you were drawn to play a musical instrument, or even earlier, because you first tried the violin and the big bass. But
well, Diane, I don't know. I think in some ways, in my case, I had musical parents. I had a sister that played music. But what was strange about my life, and I sometimes hesitate to say this because people then look at me like I'm crazy or something, that I've played the cello for now 48 years. And it wasn't until a couple of years ago, not more than 5 or 6, that I realized that I was really happy to be a musician. I always thought I loved music, but that didn't necessarily mean I should be a musician or be a professional musician, because that's something else. So I kept my love of music, but my breakthrough moment very late in life was when I discovered or finally admitted to myself that my passion, I'm passionate about music, but I have an even greater passion, and it's people. So that freed me to say, well, all the things that I was interested all throughout my life, people, cultures, why people do things that they do, why people think the way they do, and you know, in understanding composers from a different time period and advocating for them, to understanding fellow musicians, audiences, why does one travel, and why should I be someplace unless I also make an effort to understand the place I am? And then that's one way of creating community.
And you can do that through music.
I think so, because I think if, for example, with the Silk Road Project, we sort of think of that, what we see on stage is music from our world. It's from our present-day communities, from our present-day demographics, and that if we see, and one of the things about performing is that you cannot perform on stage with somebody else unless you have a great deal of trust.
Mm.
And that's, so it's, there's a hidden element. Sure, you hear music from here, 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 and there, but you actually see people in their 20s and 30s really loving being together, wanting to do something the best we know how. And with each CD that we make, it's an evolution of that friendship. You know, so we're not saying that we know everything. We certainly don't, but we're trying our best in the ways that we know how to make something work. And that's what you see on stage.
And there is a lot to learn as you begin to approach an instrument. There is a great deal that you must give over to that instrument if you are really to become a part of it, which is what you've done.
Well, Diane, you wrote a book, Finding Your Voice. And I had a teacher in college who said, Yo-Yo, you haven't found your voice. Leon Kirshner, one of the great composers. And I said, what do you mean, Leon? You don't, you know, or Professor Kirshner at that time. And says, no, I'll give you 13 years and see what happens. And I kept thinking, well, you know, what is a voice? You know how writers are finding their own voice and painters are looking for... Everybody's trying to find their voice. And finally I realized that, you know, one's voice is really, obviously, for one thing, the accumulation of what you start with, but all the experience that then surrounds you. And as I get older, I actually feel that I know less, but I actually am more sure about certain things. Mm. And I'm more sure about what I'm really passionate about.
This particular cut from Appassionato is titled Going to School. Tell me about it.
Well, this is the person that's playing the piano is actually very interesting, because that person is John Williams, the great composer, and we know him best as a film composer.
Star Wars.
Star Wars, absolutely. And this cut is from Memoirs of a Geisha, and I've worked with John for a number of years, and he is like the most wonderful, gracious, warm gentleman. He's everybody's uncle. And for him to play the piano, he says, oh, I haven't played the piano in years. And he sounds so beautiful. And every note that he writes is so well thought through and loved.
So perfect it brings tears to my eyes at 27 before the hour. You're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. I gather you and the Silk Road Ensemble are going to be at Harvard University this year.
Yes, we've been working as an ensemble been in residence at Harvard University and at the Rhode Island School of Design. It's a five-year residency, and so this is we're in our third year. And so we really interact with the students. And one of the great things that's come from this kind of residency are some courses that are given in the Faculty of Arts and Sciences. For example, there's a professor, Stephen Greenblatt, a Shakespeare scholar, and who's giving a course on the Silk Road, and his specialty is Shakespeare. So he's imagining three ships that leave the continent and go all over the world, and then sort of imagining what, and then really finding out what happens, what actually brings us to 1500 to 1600, what's happening in the world around that time. Through music, through dance, through literature, and it's another way of thinking about our past world the way that we sometimes now think about our present world. So I'm very happy with this interaction with a fabulous student body and great faculty.
Tell me about Swallow Song.
Well, this is a love song that is heard both in Kazakhstan, as well as the western part of China. And it was brought to us by Wu Tong, who's a wonderful singer. And here we play it as a song between a shakuhachi, the bamboo flute from Japan, and a cello that I've tuned down to give a sense of distance and yet closeness. So people's the lyrics are, you know, you are mine and I am yours, and this is the instrumental version of it. You know, Isaac Stern used to say that what happens in music is what happens between the notes. And when you hear the shakuhachi, it's sort of the effort and the air, and maybe it's a very close distance between the notes, but you can feel the vastness of either tiny sounds. Is it a note? Is it a sound? Is it, you know, is it a breath? And it's very spiritual to actually feel that kind of space between notes.
The other word I would use here is passion. I am feeling extraordinary passion behind these notes and their interaction.
Well, I think when you get to the state of music, you know, to the idea of music, I think, you know, most music teachers say, don't play anything unless you hear it first, unless you have something inside that you want to hear. And so that, of course, answers a lot of questions about, should I practice? You know, don't practice unless you there's something in you that wants to say something. And I think that's the passion is what you really feel inside.
Short break. We'll be right back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe, on the web at germany.info. From the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide at fordfoundation.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air.
As a bushwhacking guerrilla army, we're going to be doing one thing and one thing only. Killing Nazis. Sound good?
Yes, sir!
Quentin Tarantino's film Inglourious Basterds is on many top 10 lists. He'll be our first guest as we kick off our series of memorable interviews from 2009. Sound good?
Yes, sir!
Yo-Yo Ma, you'll be playing this tonight at the Kennedy Center. Tell us about César Franck's violin sonata.
Well, what I think is so great about this work is that this is the last movement of a sonata that César Franck wrote as a wedding gift for one of his close friends, a violinist. And you hear this music and you hear the piano starting the theme, and then immediately you hear the cello joins in with the theme, and it's just they're sort of like circling each other throughout. Sometimes one starts and the other follows, and then it gets reversed, just the way that very often in the best of relationships couples can do that with each other. You know, one leads, one follows, and at various times. And I think it is the culminating moment of, in a way, the story of a possible relationship. And what a wonderful thing to give that as a gift, as a wedding gift. And I urge many people to do the same thing if they're getting married.
How long have you been married?
I've been married 29 years.
How did you and your wife meet?
We met, I was, I think, 16 years old. We were at the Marlboro Music Festival in southern Vermont. My wife Jill is not a musician. She loves music, and she played violin, so in a way she is a musician. And we just kind of have always been, you know, together in one way or another. And I think somehow through all the travel and all the absences and the children and, you know, taking them to school and then empty nester times. And it's just, it's been quite a ride.
Marriage is quite a ride. How do you think your relationship, your personal relationship with your wife has affected your music?
Oh my gosh, that is such a wonderful question. I think if music is an expression of the inner self, I think it's to truly love somebody requires... It actually opens up literally your world, and it certainly opens up your inner world. And so I think in so many ways, if music, for example, the Franck, is expressing many forms of love or yearning or loneliness or you know, poignancy, I think it is so much easier to tap into the experience, your own experience, but also the stories of others. You know, as we go around, other people's stories get incorporated into your own way of telling a story, which is ultimately ends up being your voice.
Let's open the phones now, 800-433-8850. Let's go first to Cleveland Heights, Ohio. Good morning, Lance. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to say how much I love the Silk Road Project. I have one of the CDs. I actually use it for some healing meditations that I do on a regular basis, and also just to listen. It's just, I love the combination and the blending of Western instruments and Western traditions with Eastern instruments and traditions, and everything that Yo-Yo Ma said earlier about building community and how music can do that is so true. I'm a musician, I'm a singer myself, and I sing in a choir and do some other things professionally that have led me to wonderful communities that I would not have otherwise.
Mm. Isn't that wonderful that you have a way of expressing yourself that allows you to go into using your voice to change it slightly in articulation or in enunciating or in pitch to take you into other worlds? So you have the mechanism and the tools to find expressive content beyond where you start out with. Congratulations.
Here's an email from Steve and Jane. This summer, I had the pleasure of meeting Yo-Yo's brother-in-law, Michael. Mm-hmm. He told us the wonderful story of how your parents were afraid that you wouldn't be able to support yourself as a musician, and therefore your sister was told she needed to become a doctor. Is that apocryphal?
Well, I think, I think there's so many ways that parents worry about children. I think so. I think ultimately, what my sister has done, which is really interesting, is that she is a doctor, but she is back to her first love, playing the violin, and with my brother-in-law, organized this wonderful children's orchestra, and they have hundreds of members, and I see the graduates all over the place, and they infuse them with the love for the language of music.
And here is that very next question from Dora in Danville, Virginia. Good morning.
Good morning, Diane. Good morning, Mr. Ma.
Good morning.
What a pleasure to get through the line and an honor to address Mr. Ma. My children love your music. Oh. They listen to your music all the time, and they play the piano, but my question for you is, how can you get to influence if in any way more children in America to get involved into classical music or listen to classical music, just the way you are reaching all over the world?
Well, I think, first of all, I think they're wonderful teachers around. I think the idea of music is not so much it should be this kind of music or that kind of music, but rather it seems that a first teacher opens up a child's ears. I think a loving teacher is so incredible, a nurturing teacher is so incredibly important. I just saw my first cello teacher when I was 4, at a French teacher in France, and she still looks very young and bubbly, and it just struck me how incredibly loving she was. And I think that love leads to exploration. And I think, and whether it's classical music or jazz or any kind of music, I think what it takes is you need to use your ears and you need to align your body and your neuromuscular structure to wanting to make the sounds that you hear in your head.
And, of course, parents play a huge role in that as well.
Absolutely. I think role modeling is so incredibly important. If a parent or a teacher says, okay, well, you go do that, but I won't do it. And that sends a message also.
To Dallas, Texas. Good morning, John. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me. One of my greatest regrets in life is I did not continue piano and clarinet studies in my first and second grade Catholic school experience. But my children now, my younger children now are in a visual and performing arts high school in our city, and they are getting the benefit of that type of education. My question to you is, well, my belief is, I want you to comment, that if we emphasize music education to the extent we want to emphasize science, math, and English education in this country, our educational system and the product, the children, would benefit so much, and that in both confidence in academics and in creating what a more peaceful, you know, community-based world. And I want to know if you believe that and if there's any practical ways we can get music education, not just to create virtuoso, you know, cellists, but just to be able to appreciate Bach and understand how music is important and relates to their math or whatever into the elementary school classrooms.
That's such a great question, and I'd like to start by saying, well, I think you're absolutely right in that music, I think, really does stimulate the imagination, but what we really want to stimulate in our young school age children is to have a passion for something, and whether it's a passion through music or through a kind of cultural literacy, so that you can actually go and interpret the world in all your courses, and finding out that somehow through a nonverbal language such as music, you can cross many disciplines. And but you most of all connect someone emotionally to themselves. I think that, and to their friends. And I think that's something that more people are thinking about today. There's a Venezuelan example right now of a young orchestra of a person who actually over 30 years worked so that in Venezuela now there are 250,000 children playing in orchestras and singing in choruses, and they have a conductor who's 26 years old, Dudamel, who's now the conductor of the Los Angeles Philharmonic, and that's a great example of something, the sistema, that's worked. And how does one, and I think a lot of people are thinking about this, how can we do this in an American way that makes sense within the structures that we have?
Oh, I would surely hope that comes to fruition. You know, so many things have gone by the board in public education. I mean, even recess, for heaven's sake, much less musical education, physical education. All of it has been pumped into the academic side without feeling, thought given to the help that music and freedom to express brings to our children.
I think you're absolutely right. I think so. The way that people talk about the way people learn, there's so many styles of learning. Some
of
people
course.
Need, you know, boys may, who are 12 years old may not want to sit in their chairs, but if they're experiential and they want to experience math or physics on an open field, that could be a much much more tactile experience that leads them to then get very excited about many of the subjects. I think visually, orally, experientially, socially, interpersonal skills, all of those aspects, if we can kind of target the natural propensity for someone to go in a certain direction early on so they become passionate in their way of learning, it actually it helps for much more rounded, passionate education.
At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Here's an email from Kate, who says, I was married last month and walked down the aisle to the song Gabriel's Oboe, which I had heard before listening to the soundtrack to The Mission, but fell in love with it when I heard Yo-Yo Ma play it. I can see her walking down the aisle to this.
I can see a lot of people walking down the aisle. I love this music. And Ennio Morricone, who is essentially the John Williams of Italy. I mean, he's one of the great film composers. Worked on The Good, Bad, and Ugly. He's written so many. His gift for melody is supreme.
Where are you when you are playing this?
I'm in the space for love. I mean, there's nothing, I mean, that's more clear in my mind. When I hear Gabriel's Oboe, it's about transcendent love, it's about earthly love, it's about, you know, it's that space that's all receiving and compassionate and passionate and clear. It's your commitment book.
Ah, yes. Commitment is a long-term deal.
It's an affirmation of something.
What's next for you? Are you thinking how far ahead?
I think I'm always thinking the same thing. I'm most concerned about two things. Passionate education and understanding the preconditions of creativity. So it's not what I might do, but sort of how I might place myself and my team and people, friends and trusted colleagues in situations where people will want to continue to affirm their life through education and through creativity.
Yo-Yo Ma, he'll be performing at the Kennedy Center this evening. What a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, Diane, and hope to see you on the Danube cruise.
Ah, that would be wonderful. You'll bring lots of people along with you. And I'd certainly like to take this moment to offer sincere thanks to the men and women who have served and continue to serve in our nation's armed forces. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Tanya Weinberg, and Emmanuel Tui. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dory Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.